Geekbill Radio.
Hello once again, all you geeks and geekettes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, coming at you with another episode of Geekbill Radio. And it's that time of year where even people who don't watch football watch football. That's, of course, the Super Bowl. And we're not really going to talk the Super Bowl because we're not a sports podcast, but we are going to talk the most interesting thing from a geek point of view, at least in my opinion, for the Super Bowl, and that's the movie trailers that they show, because it's in many cases our first peek at movies that won't be out until the summer, and some of these trailers make their debut in the Super Bowl before they even hit it to theaters. And then after we talk the trailers, we will talk the upcoming movies that we are looking forward to in the year of our Lord 2020. Once again, joining me on our annual excursion into the year in film of 2020, Crazy Train Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. I am a sports guy, so I'll briefly say congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs. It's been 50 years since they won their last Super Bowl. That's hard for me to say because I'm a Broncos fan, and if you know anything about the NFL, the Broncos-Chiefs rivalry is pretty heated. But, you know, it was a good game. I'm glad we get super good Super Bowl, because I remember when we were kids in the 80s, there always seemed to be blowouts, often with my Broncos being on the losing end. But I digress.
I was going to make that joke, but, you know, you already went there first. So,
yeah, we got our wins in the 90s and a few years ago with Peyton Manning. So, yeah, but the 80s, not so much.
Yeah, I remember David Letterman making the joke, and when it was becoming football season, he's like, okay, so who's going to beat the Broncos in the Super Bowl this year? You know,
they could always get there. They just couldn't win the big one.
Which, in a way, is impressive in its own right. You know, the fact that they just made it all that time. But
I mean, quick sidebar. Everybody in the 60s, the Vikings went to four Super Bowls and lost all four. In the 90s, the Bills went to four Super Bowls and lost all four. And everybody laughs at both those franchises. I know I also pull for the Panthers. They've been to two and never won. And I know people who pull for the Browns who've never been to a Super Bowl. So, yeah, just to make it is pretty impressive. But I digress.
Right. So we got the Super Bowl movie trailers, and I'm going to link them all. Actually, there's a YouTube site, One Media, that has them all on one montage. And I think just for simplicity's sake, for discussion's sake, there's more than just what was in the Super Bowl spot. Some of these are the full-blown trailers that were released online afterwards. Sure. So some of the people that might have seen them might not have watched the Super Bowl part of it and only saw the full trailers. So first up, we'll do them in order. It's actually our second look at Black Widow, and there really isn't that much new to it. There's two things out of the trailer that I got. One was we clearly see Red Guardian having, it looks like he's got some sort of power. He's like angry and is like his tattoos glowing or something like that. Did you see that?
Right.
That
yeah,
part?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not really that familiar with Guardian, so I don't know if he's like harnessing any power there, but
I've always thought he was more just the Soviet version of Captain America, their take on the super soldier serum. So,
and then the other thing is Taskmaster, when he has his version of the shield, he just kind of does the boot step and kip up and like Captain America would do. So,
right.
You know, whether he's actually faced Captain America or just saw Cap do that on TV or something like that, because that's Taskmaster's whole shtick for anybody who might be listening to this that doesn't know who that character is. He can just like watch somebody and then mimic their every move.
Right. Which makes him quite the formidable hand-to-hand combatant. He watches you fight one time and he can mirror your fighting style instantly.
Right. So, you know, he can be a ninja, a samurai, a
pro wrestler, MMA guy, doesn't matter.
Right. Other than that, there really wasn't that much we saw, other than, of course, this is clearly Natasha, and we're going to get some Red Room action, and, you know, this is before Infinity War and Endgame. So, as far as the Bond 25, No Time to Die, the biggest takeout I had of this, and we talked a few months ago about the co-star in this, that the woman in this was going to be the replacement, but the Bond producers have come out and said, no, James Bond's never going to be a woman. You know, maybe a man of color in the future, but not going to be a woman. But the big takeout for me, other than Rami Malek being the villain, they shoot up the Aston Martin. That's like almost unforgivable for to me. But I guess as Bond, he probably has another supply of Aston Martins.
I'm pretty sure Q has several of them in that little lab that he has. I'm just saying. As long as Q's alive, we're okay.
Is Q still John Cleese?
No, he's not anymore.
Okay.
Who is? I'm not as following Bond as much as I used to. I know usually when Bond comes up on the podcast, you turn to me. I'm more the Bond guy.
You're right.
Not that I dislike Daniel Craig. Okay. I'll get that caveat first. I just haven't followed his as much as I have the others, because a lot of them, like Casino Royale, they're just remakes of original stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And Casino Royale is like the fourth version of that movie or something like that.
Well, that's the first of the novels by Ian Fleming. So if you want to know the definitive origin story of James Bond, go read. Don't watch a movie version. Go read Casino Royale by Ian Fleming, and you'll get the definitive. That's straight from the writer, you know, so you can't go wrong there, right?
Right. And M is Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes, that's right. I was going to say Simon Pegg, but I know he's more the same type character for the Mission Impossible movies now.
Right, right. Yeah, he's the person, I think, that does the effectively
the tech.
Gadgets. Mm-hmm. So I watched the Brosnan films. I think I saw one of the Daniel Craig films. No, the one thing I can definitely say about Daniel Craig is he is probably, with the possible exception of Timothy Dalton, who I think is very underrated as Bond.
Very.
Craig, I think, is the closest to how Ian Fleming pictured the character, because
I agree.
As suave as Roger Moore was, and as Connery was just Connery.
He's another level, you know,
right.
It's Sean Connery.
Right. I've said this for years, but it's like when you see Sean Connery or you see Roger Moore or even Pierce Brosnan, they kind of have that aura of them. Well, I'm James Bond, you know, just in a day's work, and they're just going through all this. And Timothy Dalton had that vibe of, all right, how am I getting out of this one? You know, which is much more like how
it
I
almost
think
had a MacGyver feel to it. That,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Good way of putting it.
I mean, I'll say this, of all the Bonds, including George Lazenby, I would say that Timothy Dalton's probably my least favorite. And by that, Mo means says I don't like him. I think he, like you said, he's a highly underrated. I think Pierce Brosnan was born to play the role.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sean Connery created the role of, or at least what we perceive it in pop culture, you know,
right.
Roger
right.
Moore took it to another level with some of the comedic over the topness. Daniel Craig does that nice balance of all those other guys, you know?
Right.
But with me saying that, I don't think Timothy Dalton was bad. I've seen all the Roger Moores, all the Sean Connerys, all the Timothy Daltons, and all the Pierce Brosnans. Daniel Craig is the only Bond. I haven't seen all the Bond films. And I'm going to be honest with you, there's not a one in any of those that I thought was a stinker and I didn't like. The weakest one was probably a Pierce Brosnan. Mm-hmm. And that would have been, and it wasn't his fault. It was the one where,
because, like, The World Is Not Enough is the one where he gets captured in the beginning because it broke the mold.
No, I'm thinking of the one where the bad guy and the love interest is the same person, and it's played by, what's her name? Denise Richards. And it's
okay.
I'm supposed to buy her as a nuclear physicist? No, that was the problem with that
movie. I think that was Tomorrow Never Dies, I want to say.
Tomorrow Never Dies, I think you're right. Yeah. And I'm going, that had nothing to do with Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan's always great. I'm not buying Denise Richards as a nuclear physicist. Nope.
Yeah, because I was working at a theater when that one came out, so I just remembered her.
Yeah, so that was the one that had Madonna did the theme song for.
I think so, yeah.
They always get one of those pop-type stars to do, and they're always really good.
Mm-hmm. And usually women. I mean, there are exceptions, but they're, you know.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorites is not women. It's Duran Duran, View to a Kill, you know.
Paul McCartney,
but my favorite,
you know, Live and Let Die.
Yep, Live and Let Die. But my favorite of all time will probably be Before Your Eyes Only by Sheena Easton. That's just... very incredible, but I digress. And I have a thing for dark-haired women with blue eyes, and, well, that's if you know anything about Sheena Easton.
Yeah. So next up, not really the opposite of Bond, but definitely more family-friendly, and that's the next Minions movie, which is full entitled is Rise of Gru. Now, I've seen, I think I've seen one of the Despicable Me movies, because that's where the Minions came from, right?
Right, right. There, Gru is the main bad guy, who's voiced by Steve Carell. And
okay.
The Minions are his Minions.
So this is probably a prequel then. And I'm a fan right. of the voice actor that does the Minions. His name is James Arnold Taylor. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of hosting at Star Wars Celebration in Anaheim in 2015. And I remember seeing okay. that. And there's video to show. If you go to the Star Wars YouTube channel and watch some of these, it's like not only was he a great voice actor, he was a great talk show host for a lot of these things that he was running, and to the point where it's like he probably, I'm not saying he would or that he should, but he could if he wanted to. He probably could be one of those late night talk shows that talks up the celebrities and, you know, has the funny exchanges. He kind of had that sure. vibe to him. But, you know, when you're Obi-Wan Kenobi, Fred Flintstone, the Minions, Johnny Test, mm-hmm. and a couple other of those right. characters all rolled into one, you know, you kind of have that vibe naturally.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved this because I just thought it was cute how they were not hiding the fact this is a period piece because it's all 70s-centric because that's, you know, when Gru would have first become a criminal mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
All the tropes of 70s pop culture, you know, tidy whities, kung fu, nunchucks, nuns. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was great. I enjoyed it. But and the Minions are a guilty pleasure of mine, so I'm definitely will go see this at some point, even if I do wait till Netflix. It will get seen before the end of the year, that's for sure.
Yeah, I see it now that's a child version of the Steve Carell character. So yeah, okay. You know, I don't know. I got a 2-year-old niece now, so you know that's certainly a reason to go see a movie like that.
You're right. I mean, I love the Minions. They're funny, you know.
Mm-hmm. If there's a lawful or neutral stupid, you know, they're not evil. They mean well.
Stupid.
You know.
Neutral stupid. We're creating our own alignments now, ladies and gentlemen. Neutral stupid.
Yeah. The Top Gun Maverick, I mean, this was one of those things we'd heard the rumors forever. And, you know, we thought, you know, is Tom Cruise actually going to do this?
Well, we got the teaser trailer at San Diego Comic-Con. Right?
Yeah, and Cruise himself introduced it. But, you know, up until then, at least from what I'd seen, we'd only heard the rumors, you know. And
right.
at first, we thought it might be this new generation, and maybe he's the trainer. You know, he'll be in the Tom Skerritt role or mm-hmm. something like that. But it looks right. more like it's going to chronicle Maverick's career. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Right. Well, I think anyone of our age is going to go see this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's be honest, Top Gun is one of the most iconic movies of the 80s, without mm-hmm. question. I mean, it is one of those. It's right up there with like Back to the Future and you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, stuff like that that defined the decade of the 80s for pop right. culture. I think it's amazing. You know, all his crazy, wacky religious and politics aside, that Tom Cruise has reinvented himself in the last 10, 15 years as a action hero that does his own stunts. And he's almost 60 years old, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's quite amazing that he's done that. And don't get me wrong. I love Ed Harris, but I don't know, trading Tom Skerritt for Ed Harris, I don't know how that's going to work out. Or is Tom Skerritt going to be in it and we just haven't seen him yet? Is there going to be Michael Ironside? Because we all know that we're both big fans of Michael Ironside. We've talked about that before. I mean, just
could we get Val Kilmer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, exactly. Obviously we're not going to get Anthony or Edwards because, you know, his goose dies. Right.
Right. Well, if you look closely, I think it's probably a flashback, but you do see Goose in there. I'm assuming right. that his son or possibly even grandson or something like, cause I mean, if the character of Maverick was, you know, 25 or maybe early 20s. We're still talking mm-hmm. 30, 35 years ago. So
right.
any son like that would be well into his, you know, middle age. But you do hear right. say my father loved you or idolized you or something like that. And it just the way right. it's done up in the trailer, it sounds like it's Goose's son.
We don't see Kelly McGillis either, do we?
Right. Yeah. But this was, at least as far as movies go, one of the first times I recall dealing with death in a movie because I, of course, like many people our generation, I saw Top Gun in the theaters. And when Goose died,
because it's sad.
Because he was such a lovable character. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And this was like the movie that put Anthony Edwards on the map, really.
I don't know. Had he done Revenge of the Nerds yet? Or would that come out?
That probably would have been a year or two before. But I mean, and then, of course, you see him in the 90s ER and, you know, the client and all that stuff where
he's going bald.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'd see him and like the client and stuff and on ER and I'm like, this guy looks familiar. And then I look it up. It's like, that's Goose.
That's Goose.
Of course, you know, who knows? He might have had a hairpiece back in the original Top Gun. I don't know.
You know, and I think this was the first time I ever remember seeing Val Kilmer because this was before Willow. Mm-hmm. This was before. I think, no, he might have done Real Genius before.
I think he did
this,
Real Genius. Yeah, he might. I think he did Top Secret before this, too, which is probably still my favorite Val Kilmer movie.
I'm a big fan of Willow. I mean, it's George Lucas. How can you go wrong, right?
And Ron Howard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's them doing a fantasy, and you know, but it's I want to see Michael Ironside. I just think he's one of the most underrated character actors, and let's be honest, there's only two times I can ever think of Michael Ironside being a good guy, and this is one of those two times.
I think I can think of a third.
That was
the third one I was thinking of. Starship Troopers.
Yes, he was a good guy, Starship Troopers. Yeah. You're right. Exactly right. He was.
And the unless we're counting Command and Conquer games, he's a good guy in those two.
No. I'm thinking more of Scanners, Michael Ironside. You know?
Right. Yeah.
We're going to do this the old-fashioned Scanners way, and he blows the guy's head up. That's what I'm thinking, Michael Ironside. Right. But I digress.
The other thing that makes me think this is a career chronicling thing is just you see these different types of jets. It's not just F-14s. It's not just I think you might even see an F-22 in there somewhere. So the fact that there's all these different types of planes makes me think it's takes place over several years. But
because I'm thinking like in the original, they were flying the F-16s. And then when they were in Top Gun, Ironside and Skerritt and those guys were flying the little F-4 Wild Weasels simply because they were faster and more maneuverable to simulate the MiGs that they would have been going against.
And then the Tomcat, I mean, I always thought the Tomcat was meant to be fast, but that's what the F-15 was for. So
Right. You know. And F-15 only had a single cockpit. It didn't have a rear man, if I remember right, correct?
You know what? You may be right.
Which is why I think there was all the F-16s. I think F-16s had the rear man.
Mm-hmm. But I'll let you take the floor for this one, Quiet Place 2, because I remember the first Quiet Place. I mean, it was – I don't think it was maybe a surprise hit, but I think it did better than – people might have expected because it was one of those unexpected hits, I guess.
Right. I really liked it because it was an interesting concept and it wound up at the end being a creature feature, you know, and as an old school horror guy, we don't see a lot of creature features anymore. You know, it's all either very realistic or slashers or something supernatural. And these were an alien or evolved race of creatures that were hunting humans and killing them and eating them. So it was a creature, you know, I wouldn't call it kaiju, but it's not far off.
Maybe in a way, something comparable to perhaps like the monsters that are in Stranger Things.
Right. Exactly. I saw it when it came out, you know, so for those that question it, almost any of the outlets I use to get information for Examining the Dead. So these are all, you know, horror centric websites and YouTube channels and stuff and publications. Almost all of it have it on their top 10 list of greatest best horror movies of 2019. So take that for what it's worth. It's on mine personal list of best horror movies of last year. And especially considering that a lot of horror stuff that you're going to find on lists like that by guys like me is going to be independent stuff. And this was a major studio release. I can't remember, and I don't want to spoil too much, but I'm thinking that John Krasinski character dies at the end of the first Quiet Place, sacrifices his life to save his daughter, who part of the whole storyline is she's deaf. And so he's trying to find parts to replace the parts in her hearing aid. And that's kind of, so there's this kind of this dual meaning to the Quiet Place. They have to be quiet because that's how these creatures hunt, is through sound, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then he's got a daughter who's deaf. So she can't hear the sound she's making. And then they learned that, like, he gets feedback, and so the feedback itself, it harms the creatures. You know, I guess if you're that sensitive to sound, I can see that. I mean, we all know how much of a headache it is when a mic gets feedback. You know, somebody grabs a live mic at a festival or something. You're like,
And that never happens to podcasters, by the way, ever.
No, but I'm saying, multiple that times a thousand, and you got the effect it has on these creatures. I thought he died at the end of that movie, yet he's in the trailer. So I mean, it's like it's been almost a year since I've seen it, so I could be just forgetting the end of the. I sadly only seen it one time, but it had such an effect on me. I put it on my top 10 list of horror movies of last year. It was really good. Mm-hmm. I also think that, you know, we talked about in our last episode when we were talking about the MCU and how Feige has openly said Krasinski and Blunt are who he's going for Sue Storm and Reed Richards. There is number one. They're kind of the hot couple in Hollywood right now. So, mm-hmm. you know, strike while the iron's hot.
Quite frankly, I thought she was a perfect cast for Mary Poppins. Like, yeah, if you couldn't, you know, do the age thing for
Julie Andrews,
if you can't de-age her, you know, yeah. I think Emily Blunt was probably the best choice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Just weird to hear a guy with a true Boston accent married to a woman with a true British accent. But
right.
love knows no color, bounds, national boundaries, things like that, you know.
Well, to make a wrestling analogy, you know, the NWA world champion Nick Aldis is married to Mickey James of WWE fame, and she's Southern American and he's from England. So imagine how their conversations go like.
Still not as strange as Maurice and Mike Mizanin. That has nothing to do with the fact that she's French Canadian and he's a California boy. It's that she's freaking hot and he's a dork. But like I digress.
Just one last thing about Miz and we'll get back to the movie. It kind of makes it movie oriented here. Miz looks like and acts like the bad guy in a John Hughes movie. You know, he's James Spader in a John Hughes movie, you know.
As you like to say, he has a very punchable face.
Right. And he knows it and plays it to a perfection.
He sure does.
But back to movies. Mulan, I think this looks really good, at least as far as remaking the animated Disney movies. I mean, just look at the cast in this that you see going through it. Donnie Yen, Jet Li, Jason Scott Lee. Really, the only one they left out that they probably could have included...
Sammo Hung?
Sammo Hung, but Ming-Na Wen was a voice in the animated version. Maybe Jackie Chan. I don't know if people would take that the wrong way.
No. I think Jackie Chan is a legend, and rightfully so.
The reason I mean it is because, you know, he's so recognizable, and everybody would expect him to be funny, you know, because...
Right. And that's where, you know, I think where Jackie found his niche was he was the first of these... big Hong Kong action kung fu movie stars who infused comedy into what he did.
I think it was one of the police stories where he roundhouse
kicked
a guy. Yeah,
Police Story 3, wasn't it?
Where he roundhouse kicked a guy on a playground, and the guy flies back and gets folded up in a jungle gym, like those big round jungle gyms he used to hang off of in grade school. The guy gets folded up inside of that.
Right, so it's like... Bruce Lee was never comedic. Chuck Norris, Jet Li's not funny like that. Sammo Hung isn't. It just, he found his niche and he's really good at it.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know what we're talking about, don't watch Shanghai Nights or don't watch Rush Hour. Go back and watch the original Drunken Master. That's where you'll see Jackie Chan at his absolute comedic best, in my opinion.
Yep. And Sammo Hung, who's like a fatter Jackie Chan.
Yeah, exactly. The only problem I have, and I've stated this before, is I am not a fan of these live action adaptation of what we've seen before. I think, for all I know, Aladdin did well, but I don't think it was the runaway hit they thought it was going to be.
Quite frankly, with Aladdin, the fact that Robin Williams is no longer with us.
Yeah. And that's no disrespect to Will Smith.
From what I've seen of it, I haven't seen the whole thing. It is what you would expect. And I mean this in a good way, Will Smith being the genie. Cause you know how it is. There's two Will Smiths. There's the serious Will Smith that's got some real acting chops, you know, go see Concussion. Yes. Yeah. And then there's the hell nah Will Smith.
Right. The Bad Boys, Independence Day Will Smith.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, Fresh Prince Will Smith fits in there or something. He's basically closest to Fresh Prince in Aladdin, but that was last year.
Right, right. Now, I've only seen three live action adaptations. I've seen the Jungle Book one, which was going to be hard-pressed to make me like it, because Jungle Book's like my second favorite animated movie of all time by Disney. It's right up there with Robin Hood and the original Rescuers. So that was going to be tough. It's okay. And that's even with Bill Murray doing the voice of Baloo the Bear, which was the perfect cat voice casting, in my opinion.
Yeah. If you're not going to get somebody that can do a Phil Harris impression, then Bill Murray's probably the best thing.
He was also good as Garfield, I hate to say it. Even those movies weren't that good. He was great as Garfield. I've seen Beauty and the Beast. And I've seen 101 Dalmatians, which the only highlight of that movie is it's fun to see Glenn Close be Cruella de Vil. Okay, that was fun, right?
Yeah.
But none of them really tickled me, you know, in a way that I thought. And it seems here they're going to be much more serious about this than, though I think Mulan was a little bit more of a serious story than some of the other Disney fairy tales. I know in today's political and social climb, having a character called Mushu, who's a dragon, that's probably not going to happen because people would be, you know, cancel culture would be so outraged. But part of the fun of the animated was Eddie Murphy doing that role, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and if I remember right, that predates Shrek, you know, so I think that was like one of the first times Eddie had done voice acting.
Yeah, I think you're right, because this is around the time I think he was doing like Pluto Nash and The Distinguished Gentleman and stuff like that.
And for what it's worth, just unsolicited here, ladies and gentlemen, check out My Name is Dolomite on Netflix right now. The return, you know, the rise of Eddie Murphy coming back is incredible. He's awesome in that movie. I'm also a big, huge fan of the Dolomite movies. I'm a big fan of blaxploitation from the 70s, and Rudy Ray Moore was awesome. The only problem is Rudy Ray Moore, who I loved, was not an attractive man, and Eddie Murphy is too good looking to play him, but I digress. But it's really good. But I mean, there seems to be little to zero of that fantastical silliness in this live action Mulan.
Right.
And let's be honest, with a strong female character and about a non-white culture into what I just talked about, they're not going to go that route. That's I think part of the re is like, we're going to show a strong female Asian character, which is great, but that was the whole point of the animated one too. It was the same thing. It was just 20 years ago. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, reminding me that some of the youth of today really upset me because you act like my generation was completely without when it came to things like this, yet y'all are remaking things or inspired by things that came from my generation that were saying these things, like Captain mm-hmm. Marvel, like Mulan. We knew it too. We just weren't obsessed with it like you were. That's all.
It's like the memes that I see about people complaining about lack of female leads or trying to blame whatever for female action movies when you just go back and I'd seen the meme where it's Sigourney Weaver is Ripley and the caption is like, hey, everybody likes me, you know?
Oh, well, yeah. What about Linda Hamilton from Terminator 2?
Right.
Hello. I mean, I sound like that curmudgeonly old man right now to our younger listeners, but you do realize that a lot of the things that you guys are creating now that speaks to that part of y'all's social concerns, and I'm not saying they're not merited and they're not warranted, they were inspired by stuff our generation was doing, so we knew it too. Come on, man. Come
even
on.
Generations before, you know, going back to our first episode of Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame and how we pointed out how The Shadow,
yeah, Margot Lane was a pretty tough chick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in many ways she was his equal. So the only other thing I wanted to mention about the live-action remakes, and we can move on unless there's something else you wanted to talk about. That 101 Dalmatians, that was kind of the live-action remake before live-action remakes were the kick.
Right.
After Mulan, we can't really spend too much time talking about it because we know so little about what was actually shown. And that's the collage of the three Marvel TV shows, you know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, WandaVision, and Loki. One thing that I couldn't help but notice is how WandaVision looks like it's going to be done up like a sitcom. I mean, I don't know if it's Vision trying to interpret life by watching sitcoms or something like that. I don't know. But clearly they have a black and white thing like it's
1950s.
Leave it to Beaver or something. Yeah,
it looked like the set of the Dick Van Dyke show to me. You know, we always tripped over the Ottoman. That's what mm-hmm. it looked like to me, but I could be wrong.
And there was definitely a Brady's vibe.
That was totally the Brady's house.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change those steps.
Right.
Sorry. And she looked pregnant in that shot, by the way, which makes me wonder, are they going to bring the twins in?
I don't know. I mean, I guess in the year 2020, an android impregnating a woman is probably not the strangest thing people could think of.
No. And I mean, we hear all these rumors about Young Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are going to have a Young Avengers and they are going to include Wiccan and Speed, she's got to have kids at some point, doesn't she?
You know, hey, maybe in a couple years, that'll be the spinoff show that'll also be on Disney Plus.
Right, you know? Right. Two things I caught in at least the WandaVision stuff. The one that came from the 80s was totally the set of Full House.
Okay.
And for those that don't know, Elizabeth Olsen, who plays Wanda Maximoff in the MCU, is the younger sister of Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, the twins who played the youngest child in Full House. So that's kind of an Easter egg.
Right.
And I did also catch there was a scene that it looked to me like it was like, you know, we're talking sitcoms here, like the Halloween episode of a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda in a traditional Scarlet Witch costume, but it looked like a Halloween costume. I'm talking, right. You know, with the big funky red headdress and the long red gloves. And
almost looks like a crown, you know, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see that little snippet there, too? It was really quick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. That looks like it's modern day, like it's supposed to be current day, right. Maybe.
Why do I think that could be a Halloween episode? And like she dressed up as the Scarlet Witch for how? Because remember, no one has ever called her the Scarlet Witch at all in the MCU. She's always been called Wanda.
Right.
We've never heard her called her comic book name ever. Just her real name. Maybe that's the episode where they finally dub her the Scarlet Witch, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, fitting. And then really for the Falcon and Winter Soldier, I mean, we see Falcon with the shield. We see Winter Soldier look like he's going to shoot somebody in the face, but then he like drops a clip out or something like that. So it looks like that's kind of going the super spy route, you might say.
It looks like Sebastian Stan finally not have to wear that god-awful wig and wear his normal hair length.
I'm sure
he's happy about that.
And of course, you can probably see who he's pointing the gun at. That's Baron Zemo. Who was in Civil War. So there you go.
And I couldn't tell. Did it look like he still had like the Wakandan arm?
I think he's wearing a...
like a glove and long sleeves, so you can't tell?
Yeah.
Obviously, he didn't grow an arm back. It's either Stark tech, Wakandan tech, some kind of tech for his arm. It's a prosthetic. We're agreement on that, right?
Yeah, if you go back and look at the video there, he points the gun at presumably Baron Zemo's face. It looks like it could be two different shots, but when he's dropping the bullets, that definitely looks like a mechanical arm. So it looks like he's still got it. It might be armored or colored or something to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. This is a fantastical world, but they haven't created limb regeneration yet that we know of.
Right. So it's probably a good idea if Rocket stays out of sight from Falcon,
because he's
from
Winter Soldier. Getting that arm.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna need that guy's arm.
I just love that's a recurring theme with that character, with Rocket Raccoon, is that he just is obsessed with stealing prosthetic body parts, eyes, legs, arms.
Mm-hmm.
And when they ask Bradley Cooper about it, he goes, I don't know, I just think that if you understand the character, he just thinks it's funny.
He's a bit of a tinkerer himself, so
yeah.
Okay, I see what you mean now, going through the WandaVision thing. I see the thing that look like the Brady's thing, and then I think I see what you mean about the
Halloween costume.
There's also one where she's in color, but there's a black and white background, and right. Then there's the one where she's wearing a plaid shirt, and that looks like it could be
totally
like
totally Full House.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, and I think they did that on purpose. That's an Easter egg.
Oh yeah, yeah, Easter exactly.
Egg. Yeah,
it definitely makes me interested in watching this, because Vision and Scarlet Witch, you know, they had their ongoing series back in the day. I don't think I ever read an issue of that. I did have issues with Vision and Scarlet Witch in them.
That was the second Vision in the comics. Remember, and he was all white, and he was like completely and utterly had no personality, because when they rebooted him, they didn't use Wonder Man, Simon Williams, memories or whatever. So he literally is an android at this point. And that, of course, changes over the time, but that puts a schism between him and Wanda in the comics, at least. Who wants to date an android? The reason she fell in love with it is because he has the consciousness of a human being. In the comics, it's Wonder Man. In the movies, it's as he even says in the movies, it's a mixture of Jarvis and Tony and Banner and, you know, and Ultron.
But the last shot, if you look really closely, it looks like Wanda and Vision are shaking, almost like they're on the bridge of the Enterprise while it's getting attacked. And so it looks like maybe they got put into this world. That's what it seems to look like to me after taking a better look at it.
I'm wondering, is this going to be a lead-in to her placement in the multiverse movie with Strange?
We do know she's going to be in it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's coming out May of next year. So we're, you know, a little bit over a year away from that. And this is going to be the second of the shows to drop, I believe. The first one's going to be Falcon Winter Soldier. So I think with it only, each show only being six episodes, I think it could be a lead into that. And I'm beginning to wonder, if this WandaVision world that we're seeing is one of the multiverse where she, with her magical powers, created this world where Vision is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you know the Scarlet Witch character and her run in the comics, she's pretty powerful, and there have been times where she's completely altered reality with her powers multiple times. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, I don't think. And I think the way she takes on Thanos one-on-one in the final battle scene of Endgame was just an appetizer for those that don't know how powerful she really is.
Yeah.
I don't think Wanda realizes how powerful she is yet. So I think there's room for that character development in this show as well.
Yeah, there's a reason why I loved playing her in the Avengers Alliance Facebook game way back when, because she could heal the entire team at once. But anyway.
Yep, she's massively powerful. People do not realize how powerful Wanda Maximoff is.
And the last stinger we got in this 30-second montage is Loki. And people have pointed out, I admit, I did not notice this on my own. I did have to read it. The uniform that Loki is wearing says TVA, and that is a reference to the Time Variance Authority. They're essentially time cops. It sounds like they're kind of making Loki into fit what might be the Marvel version of Legends of Tomorrow.
Well, we know he got a hold of the Tesseract was the one that he got in Endgame.
Right.
And he created his own portal. And remember, this is a guy we thought had died when he fell off the Rainbow Bridge and then found dark portals to get back to Asgard. So the idea of Loki jumping between realities and dimensions and time and space is not hard to buy.
Right. And they made it no secret, they meaning Marvel Studios, that the Loki series was classic Loki. He is going to be evil because it that's the out. It was Loki escaping during the events of Endgame.
Right. And you got to remember, the Loki that gets killed by Thanos at the beginning of Infinity War, that's the one that's been through everything after that that softened him to turn him into more of an anti-hero, you know?
Right.
The Loki that you destroyed my planet, the same one that Thor cries over, he killed my brother. That's not this Loki. This is the Loki from the first Avengers movie. Not repentant.
And maybe this will be the explanation of sorts to how they get there, or at least a more detailed one. I just still remember my friend and fellow podcaster, Real Marcheri, he's been on the show several times. I remember he was watching the second Loki movie, Dark World, the one that had Christopher Eccleston as the villain. And there's our obligatory Doctor Who reference. Yeah,
yeah, it's Malekith the Dark Elf, yes.
Right. And there was that scene kind of in the third act where it looked like Loki lost his arm and he's dying in Thor's arms and such. And so his girlfriend starts tearing up and starts sniffling. And point blank, he just says, no, this is Loki. We're talking Loki here. Everything is for a purpose. And then, of course, right before the credits roll, you see Loki in Odin's chair.
Right. I think for me, the story arc that Loki takes across the first three phases of the MCU was the most complete, even more so than Tony's.
Yeah, because Tony was never evil. He was just a jerk.
Right, right. I'm not saying that the character arcs Banner and Thor and Tony and Cap, they all were very good. But the story arc from the moment we see Loki as a bad guy to his final redemption, literally paying with his life his attempts to save everyone, that's as complete a story arc as it gets.
Right. Assuming Loki doesn't have an out there, too.
Right. And like we have always said, a redemption story, when told right, is one of the best stories you'll ever get. It's why Star Wars worked.
Right. Exactly. Next up on the montage, it was probably the most surprising given how it was presented, because it looks like it's going to be a sports thing, like a sports drink or sports wear or something like that. They got Kyle Busch, And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Sonic runs up. So, it's kind of that out of left field.
I'm going to go ahead and predict this now. First off, caveat, I love Sonic. When I was in college, our fraternity house had a Sega Genesis, and that was the game that came with it, and I love Sonic 1 and 2. I can still hear that little 8-bit music in my head. No, I'm thinking the underwater level. God, I loved that song. But anyway, I love Sonic, but I'm calling it right now. I think that's going to be one of the first big bombs of the year, if Doolittle isn't already.
I will concede that, again, going back to the type of role where they look like they're having fun, that we talk mm-hmm. about every so often. It looks like that's why Jim Carrey took that role, is that he just looks like he's having
fun.
Oh,
he's perfect. Perfect casting. Mm-hmm. Perfect casting.
I did not see him in the trailer, but you know, Neil McDonough is in that.
Yeah,
movie
and he
as
actually
well.
Plays a good guy in this, I believe.
Mm, okay.
Which, other than the MCU, is Dum Dum Dugan. I can't think of many times Neil McDonough plays a good guy.
I just hearken back to the soundbite I had from the Heroes and Villains Fan Fest a few years ago that we did for Heroes and Villains coverage, where he had talked about that because of who he is as a man in real life. You know, he didn't want to do love scenes. He didn't want to do controversial stuff.
Yeah, because he's a very serious family man in real life. He's married with kids, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and very devout in his faith as well. So he kind of wrote it down what he thought he was good at, and mainly it came down to soldiers and bad guys. And when you think about it...
Yeah, and when you're blessed with those naturally piercing blue eyes, that's good for a villain.
Yeah, and that Cheshire Cat smile that he has.
Oh, yeah. He's always got that cat that ate the canary look on his face, doesn't he?
Right.
We've talked off mic about Justified, great modern Western star in Timothy Oliphant, and I've been rewatching it, and he is the main villain. I think it's season 4 or 5. And my girlfriend, who knows him as Damian Dart from the Arrowverse, goes, "Oh God, he's in this." I said, "Yeah, and he's a bad guy." She goes, "Well, shocker."
Right.
You know, I said, "Wait a second. He was Dum Dum Dugan in the MCU." She goes, "That's the only time I can think of him playing a good guy." Right. And there is one other time, and I can't remember, it was a bit role. I want to say in another television show, but yeah, he's always a bad guy.
Yeah. I can name one other, but it's a voice role. And I know Arrow ended recently, so there's still people mourning over that. There is a Green Arrow animated short.
Yes, he is the voice in that, isn't he?
He's the voice of Green Arrow. So yeah, Damian Dark voices Green Arrow before Stephen Amell played the role.
That's right. I'd forgotten about that. You're right.
And Malcolm McDowell as Malcolm Merlyn, fantastic.
That writes itself.
right, absolutely. Now, probably the longest trailer, at least on the full montage, is the Fast and Furious 9. I think you're just calling it Fast 9 or F9 or something like that. And I must confess, I've never seen an entire Fast and Furious movie. I saw enough of the first one to get it, and I consider myself a car guy. I know, Trent, you're a bit of a car guy. So normally I would be all over this stuff, but it's like, to me, good car movies are like Bullet, you know.
French
Connection.
That was going to be my first Bullet, Steve McQueen.
Especially when you know Steve McQueen's doing all of his own driving in that.
I mean, I even consider, to a certain level, Smoking the Bandit as a car movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it popularized the Black Trans Am, literally.
Yeah, I mean, even Cannonball Run was a bit of a car movie, you know. Mm-hmm. But they don't make movies like that anymore. I mean, what we have is Fast and the Furious,
mm-hmm.
whereas the stunts are so over the top and so unbelievable. You're like, come on, really? At least you could believe what they were trying to pull off in stuff like Bullet. And when they did over the top stuff in things like Cannonball Run or Smoking the Bandit, it was for comedic effect.
Right.
It was the old Dukes of Hazzard, where the General Lee could clear it and, you know, Roscoe would try, but then he would get caught halfway on the jump and then be stuck in a tree, and Boss Hogg would have to call a record to get him out. And of course, Cooter would show up and laugh about it. But, you know, you get those same kind of stunts, but they succeed at them in Fast and the Furious. And you're kind of like,
Right. But, you know, one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite songs as a little kid was the General Lee by Johnny Cash. And he has that line, "I'll jump that pond and we'll go running free." And it's just like, you just picture it right in your mind.
Yes, exactly. Okay, let me say this about Vin Diesel. There's a reason why the three biggest roles he's known for outside of Fast and the Furious are as a robot from outer space that doesn't say much, an alien who says 5 lines in the entire movie, and the voice of a talking tree that says 1 3-word phrase. He's not the most versatile actor in the world. Let's just be honest, okay?
But what he does well.
Yeah, I'm not knocking on Vin Diesel. I will say, I think what's the one where it's a Disney live action family comedy where he plays a Navy SEAL who's supposed to protect this family, who's the children of like some huge weapons designer for the government.
It's Kindergarten Cop, basically.
Yeah. He was awesome in that. It was a great movie. Just didn't do that well. The Pacifier, that's the name of it.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Great movie. He was great in it, but it's like no one remembers Vin for that. They know him for Iron Giant, Groot and the Riddick stuff. And none of those roles are ones that require him to show a whole lot of range of emotion or anything else. You know, hell, two of them are voice jobs. They're not even live action.
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong. We all love Groot. Come on. Groot is probably one of the five most popular characters in all the MCU because he's Groot. He's fun, but doesn't take a whole lot to just sit there and go, I am Groot.
I did see some of the online backlash. That might be too strong of a word, but John Cena is in the movie. Looks like he's the top heel in the movie, and he is supposedly Vin Diesel's brother. And of course, I posted on Geekville Radio. It's like, well, they look so much alike, but they don't. But people are saying this is a ninth movie, and we're only now seeing his brother. And of course, I go for the obvious joke. Oh yeah, John Cena was in all the other movies. You just can't see him.
This is a franchise that has taken a popular, well-known wrestler and turned him into a bad guy in his first movie, and then he's a good guy by the third movie he's in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Worked out okay for The Rock. I mean, as far as I know, that movie he did with Statham that was a spinoff did pretty good, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if it crossed that billion mark, but it was definitely up there.
It was bigger than seven figures. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they do in this franchise, is what I'm saying.
All right, one more on the movie trailer list. I know enough about SpongeBob that I know enough of the characters. I mean, one of my favorite character actors and voice actor, Clancy Brown, is in it because he's Mr. Krabs on top of being, Lex Luthor and, in the Highlander movies and all that. But
the Russian Kurgan.
right. And this looks like how kind of a big screen take, because they've done SpongeBob movies before, but they were more of the traditional animation. And this is like
2D.
Yeah, and this is the 3D CGI take on it, but it looks like they definitely tried to tread that hollow ground carefully, because it really does look like if you were to do a 3D SpongeBob CGI, it looks like they nailed the look of it perfectly.
Yeah, I love SpongeBob for what it's worth. I think it's great. It's interesting because, of course, the creator died, was it last year, 2 years ago, Helgenberg, or whatever his name was? So I don't think he was involved as much more than executive producer the last couple years that it was on Nickelodeon, but it is one of those iconic shows that a whole generation grew up on, and that generation is now in what, their mid-20s probably,
right? They're branching into filmmaking themselves,
but into filmmaking, and they're going to be starting families and wanting to watch movies with their own kids, so it makes sense to release it now. And I mean, it's one of the most infectiously annoying, catchy theme songs of all time, so that in and of itself makes it good to me. They're funny characters. I mean, SpongeBob is an idiot. Patrick's even more of an idiot. Squidward is one of the most depressing creatures I've ever seen depicted in any format. And Mr. Krabs is just funny. And Plankton's a great heel. So, I mean, how can you go wrong?
Right.
And I mean, if you need to know anything more about the Krabs character, the Clancy Brown voice character, when he's asked, why did you open restaurants? I like money. That's his answer. At least he's honest.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dive into the year 2020 in geek film. This is Geekville Radio, and we will be right back.
Are you looking for a gaming-themed podcast? Then check out You Just Got Frag. Join host Jared Aubrey and his panel of gaming enthusiasts as they discuss news and accomplishments in the gaming world, and of course, the gripe of the week. That's all at YouJustGotFrag.com, part of the Wrestling Brethren podcast family.
Attention all Time Lords and Ladies. Geekville Radio presents Examining the Doctor, a weekly look at everybody's favorite Time Lord, the Doctor. Join Mark and Seth as they bring their signature blend of knowledge and humor to favorite and not-so-favorite episodes of Doctor Who. From Hartnell to Capaldi, Examining the Doctor provides episode commentaries for classic and current Doctor Who fans alike. Examining the Doctor, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at GeekvilleRadio.com.
All right, we are back. We're going to talk the rest of the movies that we're looking forward to in 2020. Obviously, we'll skip over the ones that we saw previous segments because, we already talked about them. Mm-hmm. As we record this, Wednesday night, February 5th, Birds of Prey will be out on Friday, April 7th. And, I mean, I liked Suicide Squad. I know this is not technically Suicide Squad, but there's two reasons why I want to see it. One is, I mean, it actually does look entertaining. I have my reservations with how Black Canary and Huntress are going to look like. But Ewan McGregor as Black Mask, I think, is a very good casting.
And a very underutilized bad guy, let's be honest.
Right. Yeah, we talked about him a little bit before about Black Mask. He's not an A-lister. He's like a B+, but in the hands of the right writer, he's one of the better villains. You know, he's a crime boss, literally.
Yep. Roman Sionis. And he goes crazy, which always works well for Batman villains. Let's just be honest.
He seems like if they were to have done the movie 20 years ago, Nicolas Cage, because you get that, you know, epic Nicolas Cage freak out at some point during the movie.
Yeah. Not the bees! No, sorry.
Now, one that I did not hear about until recently meaning within the last month or so, or maybe I saw the title and didn't think much about it because it looked like it was just another reboot. And That's Fantasy Island, you know, which is going to be coming out Valentine's Day. But the different thing about it, and I can kind of understand why they did it, it is, of course, connected to the 80s TV show that had the impeccable Ricardo Montalban. I mean, as great as he was as Khan in the Star Trek TV series, as well as Wrath of Khan, me personally, I'm probably going to remember him most as Mr. Rourke. And I think part of that is because that character just seems like you just took Ricardo Montalban and put him in a nice suit and let him be Ricardo Montalban.
I'll always remember him for his commercials about rich Corinthian leather. Yeah. I mean, he is, I'm going to nominate him now and you can shoot it down. I think he probably goes on that list of 7 out of 10, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Just for his absolute swag. I mean, he is legitimately top 5 most swagacious guys ever in Hollywood. I mean, just having like just a total swag that is his own and he owns it.
Right. He can sing. He can dance. He can do choreographed swimming if you follow his career.
Yep. And just one of the best names ever in Hollywood, Ricardo Montalban. That just makes women swoon, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
That's a Clutch the Pearls type name.
We're going to have the Invisible Man. And my understanding is this is the continuation of Universal Pictures' Dark Universe, how they were bringing in Jekyll and Hyde and the Mummy and all that stuff?
As the horror guy, I'm really mixed about this. Let me say the Claude Rains original Universal, you know, Invisible Man, incredible movie, highly underrated. But when you're going against the Bela Lugosi Dracula, the Boris Karloff Frankenstein monster, you know, you're up some stiff competition there. You know, I get it. This attempted a reboot, this would be, I mean, first off, it was supposed to be, you know, Dracula Untold, and it bombed, and Universal like, oh, no, we're just kidding. That's not the reboot. The real reboot's The Mummy with Tom Cruise, and then that bombed, you know? So it's like, I know that the MCU has made this whole concept of shared universes quite popular, and everybody in Hollywood wants to get on board that gravy train. I just have not been very impressed with their attempts to do that. It's like, I just think the original Universal monsters, the Claude Rains, the Boris Karloff, the Bela Lugosi, the Dwight Fries, the guys that did those movies back in the 30s and 40s, you know, the Lon Chaney Jr., those are so iconic. Can you even try to reboot them?
Right. And, you know, it's reinventing the wheel or, you know, recasting Casablanca or something like that.
Don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. You'll not find a bigger fan of the old Hammer stuff. Love Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing. I know you do as well, Seth. But when you ask someone, what does Dracula look like? What does Frankenstein look like? They're going to give you the Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi. If you ask them, what does the Invisible Man look like? They're going to give you the Claude Rains from that. I mean, that's how iconic those depictions have become. And I don't know if you can just touch. I don't know if that can be touched.
Right.
Just
right.
My opinion.
Like Lon Chaney is the Wolfman.
Right. I mean, it's always going to be bogey. Always. There's nothing you can do about it. It just is what it is.
Right.
I mean, no one will ever be Dorothy but Judy Garland.
Right. Next up, we're finally getting on April 3rd. It's been delayed. I think there's been a lot of reshoots, but The New Mutants, which is going to be effectively the final Fox made independently before the merger
buyout
with Disney. Yeah. And I've heard it's gotten reshot over the years, and that usually doesn't bode well for quality. I did notice in the trailer that Maisie Williams is in it. And of course, she made her name in Game of Thrones. She literally kind of grew up on that show.
Right.
And She seems to be a star on the rise. Again, I wouldn't call her an A-lister, but you know, she's that at that spot where people are recognizing her when they see her on a screen, something other than Game of Thrones.
Yeah, she's, I think, like Millie Bobby Brown, you could probably throw in that category. Finn Wolfhard, she's in that same
conversation, you might say.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it looks like maybe this is why they did the reshoots, but I've heard that it's going to be kind of a horror themed movie and it might even get the R-rated treatment. So, you know, that seems to be the new thing for comic book movies now.
Yeah, but what does Marvel care? Because if they want to do a New Mutants, they're going to do their own take when eventually once. Because it's like you said, this is the last one that Fox has any, you know.
Right. It's a lame duck mutant movie.
Right. Which, let's be honest, people knew that going into Dark Phoenix, and that, on top of the fact it wasn't a great movie, is probably why it didn't do as well as they had wanted it to.
Right. Moving on to May, we're getting into the summer season. It's funny, I saw the trailer for this movie shortly after we did the nostalgia trip on Scooby-Doo, and that's the Scoob movie. And what I'm happiest to see in this is, while they do have some of the parts being played by known actors, Scooby himself is still going to be Frank Welker. Now, unfortunately, that means Frank Welker is not going to be Fred, even though Fred is his regular voice. It's like Optimus Prime still being Peter Cullen in the Transformers movie. It's like it just wouldn't seem right if it was anybody other than him.
Right. Well, I think my biggest concern is I can't remember for the life of me who they've cast to play Shaggy, but it's not Matthew Lillard. And I kind of thought Matthew Lillard had done a good job at kind of making that role his own. You know, he was so good in the live action versions. He's been doing the voiceover in a lot of the animated stuff as of late. So,
yeah. And this is also animated, so, you know, why not?
So, yeah, and my understanding was he wasn't even told until after the trailer dropped, oh, by the way, we're making a new Scooby movie and you're not in it. So that's kind of a slap in the face, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just think, you know, he embodied every aspect of Shaggy. He had the kid silliness, and if you want to go that route that we've talked about we don't like, but the more adult take on some of the, you know, the innuendo, he could pull that off too, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know what they're going for. I mean, Hollywood's one of those is what have you done for me lately type places. We all know that.
Right. I've heard the story James Arnold Taylor talked about in his podcast. It's just chance that I'm bringing him up again or coincidence. He was in the animated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that came out about 10 years ago. And he had the story of, I want to say it was Weinstein or somebody like that, tried to get a hold of it, and they were going to recast known voice actors. And fortunately, the guy who was producing or directing at that point stood up for it and said, hey, look, we already got everything recorded. You literally have to pay no extra money. You know, you can just release it as is. And that's what they did. And I don't know how it did financially, but it was nice that the filmmakers stuck up for the hardworking voice actors to keep them in the movie.
Shocker that the Weinsteins would be, I mean,
without even getting into. Yeah.
I don't want to kick a man while he's down, but it sounds like he might be a rapist. So I don't care. But I mean, the long before that whole mess with Harvey Weinstein, it was a pretty well documented in Hollywood that Harvey, but even Bob, his brother, were bad about it. You hear us. We talk all the time about how it often, a movie could be great, but a studio wanted to get too involved and not let the director do his thing. The Weinsteins were known notorious for that. And you always heard that even before all this crap?
Yeah, even if it's not them, it's why we get a Halle Berry Catwoman movie, you know?
Right. I mean, it's just, I just know that particular studio, the Weinstein brothers, were notorious for that. And like I said, I'm not kicking a guy while he's down, even though I do think he's probably a rapist. It is what it is. This is long before this, you know, that was just a thing in Hollywood. Don't do a Weinstein Brothers movie. Cause if you do, they're going to try to get it. They're going to try to interfere and screw up your vision. And as a horror guy, and they've done some horror movies, there are, excuse the pun, horror stories about the making of some of these movies because of them wanting to get involved and change things. So not a shocker that you say that.
Right. Goes back to the talk we've had before about the Spider-Man movie that was supposed to come out in the 80s, where Canon Pictures got the rights to it because they thought it would make for a horror movie about a guy turning into a spider. And they actually hired Tobey Hooper and then later, I think, Joe Zito. And
it both was horror guys, by the way.
Right. And both of these horror directors told them, this is not a horror movie. This is a superhero movie. But I still want to do it. You know, so
Well, I mean, that's because Joe Zito and Toby Hooper are geeks, too. They, right. Sure, heck yeah, you know.
Right. On a lighter note, because we get to do our recurring joke whenever these things come along, the list that we're taking these from, by the way, is at movieinsider.com, and I'll have the links in the show notes there at geekvilleradio.com/253. Coming out, at least as of this recording, for May 15th, Untitled Saw Reboot. I'm, as much as I'd like them to call it Untitled Saw Reboot, even though it has Saw in the title, they're probably not going to do that.
No. I think you've heard me say it before. You know, we've talked about Saw and Examining the Dead. You've asked me about that a lot because you are a fan of Tobin Bell.
Right.
You know, just one of those guys that has a great voice and everything. Saw is that franchise that probably should have died four sequels ago. But even with that being said, they've done a pretty good job at least making the sequels that seem like they shouldn't happen somewhat interesting as to how they happen. You know, I don't know. It's you remember the days like when the first Saw came out and it was like this surprise hit, and it actually had like pretty no. I mean, Cary Elwes and Danny Glover were in it, so it wasn't like there was no name actors in it. You know, mm-hmm. And this is before James Wan was the hot new director. Nobody knew who he was at that point, and it became so hot they literally released one around Halloween every year for what, like 5-6 straight years.
A lot of them with different casts, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, which made sense, but it's like, as a horror guy, I can tell you my opinion. Saw was one of those that with each successive sequel, there were less and less returns, you know? And I think Jigsaw, which was supposed to be like a soft reboot, that finally brought everything full circle, which I finally got around to watching on Amazon Prime. I thought it was a nice cherry on top of the sundae, bow on the gift, and we need to walk away. So I don't see why you need to, no.
Yeah.
I mean, and it'd be one thing, like you brought up earlier with Emily Blunt with Mary Poppins. Though I wasn't excited about them redoing a Mary Poppins, that was still, what, 50, 40 years removed from the original Julie Andrews?
Mm-hmm.
This is a reboot of a franchise that just ended, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Right.
Why?
When the sequels had their day, the remake's on its way.
Yeah, and how'd that work out for Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th and Texas Chainsaw Massacre? I'm just, as a horror guy... I don't think studios understand the hardcore horror fans, which is no matter how cheesetastic a movie is, if we decide that it's iconic and legendary, we're not going to want to see anything else. And the fact that Jackie Earle Haley, who is a great actor, could not convince us as Freddy Krueger is proof positive of that. It's like, we don't want to see anybody other than Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger. And if you give us anything else, even an incredibly good actor like him, like Jack Earle Haley, we don't care. We don't want it. Robert Englund is Freddy Krueger. Wes Craven needs to be the creator of it and leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Hollywood. It's what they do.
Mm-hmm. June, we're going to get the long delayed. In this case, I have more faith that the delay will probably help it. And that's Wonder Woman 1984. Obviously, the sequel to Wonder Woman and taking place in 1984 because Diana is effectively immortal.
Immortal.
Right. Not really much we can say about this that we haven't already seen, but
right,
I'm probably going to see it opening weekend.
Oh yeah, yeah, and I know she's not Linda Carter, and all regulars know my predilections toward Linda Carter. She's my dream woman. Yes, I said it. Mm-hmm. Gal Gadot ain't bad. She's not hard on the eyes, that's for sure.
Right,
and I think besides being pretty, I think she brings a lot to the role. I think she's good in the role. You know,
right.
I've said all along, as crappy as the DCEU movies have done, especially when compared to the MCU movies, I don't think it's because of bad casting. I think the casting's been pretty well done in those movies. Of course, everybody was about Ben Affleck, and he turned out to be pretty damn good as Bruce Wayne. The only, I guess, the weakest link is probably Henry Cavill, and you and me have said multiple times that it's not that we don't think Henry Cavill could be a good Superman. We think he could. It's, he gets the bad scripts.
Exactly.
You know, Jason Momoa, I think, is probably the weakest, and that's not because I think Jason Momoa is bad. I just don't like the whole surfer bro Arthur. You know, I want, you know, the Peter David. Bring me Orm. That's the Aquaman I want, you know? Where's Orm? But that's not how they're directing Jason Momoa, so I get it, you know?
Right. Another one you're going to know more about than I do, Candyman. I believe this is another reboot. I don't think it's a
sequel. But at least Candyman's, what, 30 years removed from the original? But once again, I refer back to the remakes of, you know, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Nightmare on Elm Street. To refer back to all those movies, they've all been remade and to varying degrees of success, probably Texas Chainsaw Massacre being the most successful. Are we going to want to see anybody play Candyman but Tony Todd? Probably not.
Right.
I mean, Jason and Leatherface, you can kind of get away with it because they wear masks. Freddy Krueger and Candyman are two horror icon villains who the actor, though Robert Englund wears heavy makeup, you can still tell it's Robert Englund. And there's no makeup that Tony Todd wears except for the hook hand, you know, and that's all like prosthetics.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what makes Candyman and Freddy Krueger work is the personalities that Tony Todd and Robert Englund infused into them. If you're not going to cast Tony Todd, that ain't going to work. Hey, tell them that. It ain't going to work, you know. I love Candyman. I think it's a highly underrated supernatural slasher, you know, and it's truly supernatural. And by that point in the slasher cycle, we had gotten away from just pure serial killers. By that point, even Jason was a zombie, you know, so the supernatural elements were fully ensconced in slashers at that point. I just thought it was an interesting take because it was a slasher that took place in an urban setting and played upon the old urban legend of the Bloody Mary and an urban legend, and also made some social statements about, you know, urban decay and poverty and housing developments and things like that. So from a social standpoint, it probably will be well accepted as being poignant by today's standards, but I don't know if the hardcores are going to accept it if it ain't Tony Todd.
All I have to say is the Candyman can. I had to make a joke. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you're a Chicago guy, so you'll appreciate this. The original setting for the first movie was Cabrini Green.
Oh, okay.
And for those that don't know, because you're not from Chicagoland like Seth, Cabrini Green is the projects that Good Times, the old 70s sitcom, was supposed to take place in. The absolute worst of the worst housing projects in Chicago, correct? Mm-hmm. Would you describe it as that?
I was never there myself, but I've heard a lot of stuff after Mayor Daley, Richard M. Daley, that it got a lot better when he became mayor.
One of my old bosses grew up in Cabrini Green. And as she put it, there's a reason why when I graduated high school, I joined the Navy at 18. It was to get out of there.
Makes sense. Yeah.
There you go. And, you know, Rachel's great lady and did good for herself. And she said the best decision was getting out of Cabrini Green. So there you go.
Moving on to July, we're going to have Ghostbusters Afterlife. This is the one that is supposed to be the sequel to the original two movies. And I'm assuming it ignores the remake. I don't know if we've gotten a true.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd's pretty much said that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there we go.
He's tried to say it politely that they're, you know, he respects what they did, Paul Feig and the gals that did that movie, but this has nothing to do with that. That's basically what he said, which was a polite way of saying, screw that movie, I think, you know.
And to be fair, you know, Dan Aykroyd did do the cameo in the remake, and, you know, they left it up in the air as to whether he really was Ray Stantz or not.
Right, right. I mean, I think they made no bones about it. That wasn't Winston. That was Ernie Hudson cameo.
Right.
You know, what I said earlier when we were talking trailers, that I predict that Sonic's going to be the first big bomb. I'm afraid this could be the second. I don't want it to be. I'm rooting for it because I'm a big Ghostbusters fan. Once again, one of those iconic movies from our youth defines the 80s. I mean, it's one of the quintessential 80s comedies, isn't it? It's long removed. You got the whole bad taste in a lot of people's mouths over the one from a few years ago. All the drama that's been well documented about will Bill Murray do it? Will only do it? It just Rick Moranis ain't going to be in it because for whatever reason he retired from acting. But I'm hope he's enjoying his retirement. You know, because I enjoyed all his movies I'd ever seen him in. I think it's a coin toss here. Casting Paul Rudd, who is relevant and current and funny, doesn't hurt. I will say that.
Agreed. Another horror themed movie. Actually, we've got a couple coming up in a row here.
Mm-hmm.
Purge 5. Now that's the fifth in a series, right?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I haven't heard much about it. Purge is one of those movies, those franchises I've wanted to like, but it's those movies that wants to say something politically and socially, but it's not quite sure what it wants to say or how to say it, if that makes any sense. Right. I think it's highly stylized violence. It makes very major critiques of big government, elitism, classism, conservatism, Christianity, and just religion in general. The last Purge movie was actually The Purge Show, and it was based on where The Purge started, like the first Purge, because the last Purge before this one, the fourth Purge movie, was essentially why the Purge ended, because they finally elected in a woman to be president who was going to get rid of the Purge. She saw it for what it was. And that's kind of the whole, you know, I mean, the best part of those movies is the only recurring character is Frank Grillo, you know, who played Crossbones in the MCU as a security specialist who's in the last two movies. He's the only recurring, which, you know, horror movies are never known for recurring characters except for the villains, right? But it's one of those things. I think it's like Saw. It's just the young people, which often are the major demographic horror movies go after. It's really hit a vibe with the current younger viewers. And so they're going to go watch it, whether it's good or not. Not that dissimilar from what Friday the 13th became in the late 80s when we were kids, right? We all knew how silly Friday the 13th was by the time they got up like number six, number seven, but I still love them, mm-hmm. You know? And I know a lot of people before our generation and after our generation, like, well, those movies were terrible. I guess The Purge is one of those. If you're the right age group in this time, they make sense to you. But for everybody else, you're kind of like, meh.
Makes sense. Yeah. Escape Room 2. Now, this is one of those, if I understand it right, was kind of along the same lines the Saw movies, or they kind of called it, you know, like violence porn or horror porn or something
like
that.
Yeah, it was. I would classify it more as a thriller than I would horror, personally.
Okay.
But yeah, well, I didn't know it did well enough to merit a sequel, but hey.
Apparently it did, yeah.
Yeah. And then again, sometimes on horror and thriller movies, the standards of financial return are much lower than other type movies for a sequel to get greenlit. Let's be honest. I mean, horror movies always make money, but they aren't huge money makers unless they're Get Out or Us or, you know, Silence of the Lambs. So, but those are the exceptions, not the rule. I mean, for every Exorcist out there, there's what, at least 300 to 400 horror movies that barely break even.
Right.
So, you know, that is what it is in the horror world. Just is what it is.
Another that I think would still qualify as horror, at least as far as having some of the themes, it'll probably still be billed as a superhero movie, and that's Morbius. The trailer hit a week or two ago, and of course that is Jared Leto's latest movie. And it's probably why he didn't do Birds of Prey, because he was busy doing Morbius, and he can now be added to that list of actors that have been in both Marvel and DC. I can't really say anything that I haven't already said, but it looks like they give away pretty much the entire plot in the trailer, but I don't think that's a bad thing because kind of seeing that, yes, this is a vampire story.
Well, I asked the same question about this. I asked about Venom. How do you do a Morbius movie without Spider-Man in it?
Right.
But I mean, for those that don't know, Morbius is mostly a Spider-Man villain, but he's also had his run-ins with Ghost Rider and Blade for obvious reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I don't know. It was nice to see the stinger at the end with Michael Keaton as you know, Adrian Toomes, Vulture, because I think we were in agreement. Other than Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk, he might be the best villain in all the MCU so far.
I'm
not talking bad about Thanos. I thought Josh Brolin did great, mm-hmm. You know. And we all love Tom Hiddleston as Loki, but like we said, he becomes an anti-hero in the end. The whole scene, you've said it before many times, Seth, when he turns around and says, I'll kill you and your whole family, and he's not even in the Vulture costume, he's just Michael Keaton being crazy Michael, is legitimately one of the creepiest moments ever in film in the last 20 years. You're like, this guy's not kidding. He's violent and scary.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's going to be another step closer to the Sinister Six that I think they've all but confirmed is coming. Yeah.
And I think Venom and him were the first two members, right? Well, I mean, it didn't work out when they tried to make Jamie Foxx Electro, you know, in the Andrew Garfield ones. And part of that is, who's buying Paul Giamatti as the Rhino?
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, what?
I love Paul Giamatti. I think he's a great actor. But as Rhino? Come on.
Right.
In a mech suit, no less. But I digress.
The long-awaited, almost 30 years later sequel, Bill and Ted Face the Music, one that for the longest time I thought was a joke that they weren't going to make, but they are doing it, and it is a sequel. It's not a reboot. You know, Bill and Ted are 30 years older and have families their own now, and of course the entire premise is their music didn't save the world like George Carlin told them it did in the first movie.
Right. Speaking of Super Bowl trailers, did you see the Super Bowl ad that had Alex Winter?
Was that the one where it was kind of the amalgam of all like the space and time travel, like they got Flash Gordon and the Enterprise.
They got the R2 and 3PO, and I thought it was a TARDIS at first until it opened up and a young Alec Winter walked out, and then an old Alec Winter walked out. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, if they signed on. I mean, obviously Walmart paid them because, I mean, it's Walmart, right?
Right.
They got the rights to Star Trek and Star Wars. They're not hurting for money, okay? but I think Wonder, he's like, well, this would be bad advertising. I am totally down with this movie. What are your thoughts on it? I think it's the concept that it is. To me, it's not that different than like what H2O was for the Halloween franchise. It was a look at what 20 years later. If you do a sequel that far removed, like I think Ghostbusters Afterlife is going to be, and you kind of admit to the audience, we know it's been 20 years since the last one came out, and that's why this movie is 20 years later. I think it works fine.
Yeah, you have to do it right, but it certainly works much better than the remakes that we were bemoaning a few minutes ago.
And let's be honest, Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves, their chemistry is good. They're funny together. They're great in those. Like, I don't know how well the burned out surfer, stereotype plays out in 2020, but it was perfect for when it came out when we were growing up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if they can pull off adult versions of that, which I think both of them can, I think it's going to be hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, especially, and this is just my idea, just one man spin. Maybe their taste in music has changed and they're all like classical aficionados now or something.
I can tell you as an old school metalhead, it's not that I dislike like Five Finger Death Punch or Avenged Sevenfold or the newer stuff. It just doesn't have the charm that like Iron Maiden and Motley Crue and those bands had in the 80s. They're all metal, you know? So I get this strange feeling that you might be right on that. Their musical tastes will be like, they aren't. That's such a good comedy that they don't like the new hard rock bands. They still like the hard rock bands of the 80s. You know, those are jokes right themselves.
Yeah, given the Iron Maiden soundtrack, maybe Dokken, Scorpions, you know.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Not the new stuff, you know.
Right.
And I love Ghost. I'm not a big fan of Five Finger Death Punch. They're a little bit overrated, but they're not bad, you know. But I get it. That's the new school metal, you know. That are not new school. That's, don't get me started on new metal. I do, but that's the current popular type of metal. It's not the same, but I wonder if Buddy was alive, if he could believe what, you know, rock and roll music became, you know, because
right,
it's so far removed from what he was doing with the Crickets, but it's all rock and roll, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Another one that I am interested in now, is this based on a game or a book, Monster Hunter? Because I thought there was a Monster Hunter game for a while.
Yeah. It's a video game. Mm-hmm. This is Paul W.S. Anderson, same guy that did the Resident Evil movies. So he has had some financials and success with creating movies based on video games. And we know that that doesn't always happen. In fact, more often than not, it doesn't. The downside of that is he is married to Mila Jovovich. So he seems to cast her in all his movies. And I love Mila Jovovich. I think she's gorgeous to look at. But other than the hippy dippy chick she played in Dazed and Confused, has she ever had really a lot of range as an actress to you?
Fifth Element is what I remember her most in, but
But once again, she kind of played all, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of acting range in that role. She was just innocent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, she was a hippie in Dazed and Confused. And it was a small role, but everybody had a small role in that movie because it was an ensemble movie. You know, people forget Ben Affleck was in that movie too. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if there was a big actor, I can't think of the guy's name now, the one that plays the quarterback who refuses to sign the no smoking pot policy for the football coach. You know, he's kind of the main character, but it's an ensemble. And those are the best. You have Fifth Element in that. The rest of it's Resident Evil. And she is Alice, which is great. But Alice is essentially a robot or a clone being controlled by the Umbrella Corporation. I don't know if we're going to get much more acting range here. But I mean, I think when you make a video game movie, you're probably going for a popcorn movie anyway. So maybe I'm worrying too much.
The next Conjuring movie, Conjuring the Devil Made Me Do It, and the Nun movies that have come out over mm-hmm. the last couple of years, they're connected to this, right?
Right, right. And the third Conjuring, one of the demons that the couple banishes takes the physical guise of the villain's name is Volek, takes the physical guise of this evil-looking nun. And then they had a spinoff movie called The Nun that gave the backstory to that. I kind of like the Conjuring franchise. It's they're old haunted house movies. They're just done with, you know, a 2000s aesthetic and technological abilities. You know, if you like things like The Omen, The Exorcist, Amityville Horror, the original Amityville Horror, you know, one with James Brolin, you'd like The Conjuring stuff. So I'm excited to see that. I mean, they're not my favorite horror movies out there, but I'm always a sucker for a good ghost story, you know, and so, yeah, I'm down with that.
The last one coming out in September, again, it's a prequel, kind of like what you were talking about with The Nun, and that's King's Man. It's the prequel to the Kingsman movies, so I'm assuming they're just kind of, I think it looks like it takes place a few decades ago, right?
I think that's right. I mean, I loved the first one. That was that movie, like, wow, where'd that movie come from? That was really good, you know? And then the second one was fun, but wasn't as good as the first, but still was good, you know? So I'll be interested to see here. You know, I guess if it's a prequel, they're going to de-age Colin Firth or cast somebody that looks like a young Colin Firth to be in this. Because Eggsy, obviously, he's like, what? In the first movie, Edgerton's supposed to be like a 19, 20-year-old kid as he gets inducted into the Kingsman. So it can't be about him. I'd think it would be about his dad, who was a Kingsman.
Was that Tristan?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Matthew Good is the actor.
Okay. 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 Yeah. No, Edgerton's the guy who played Elton John in the Elton John biopic last year. Rocket Man, mm-hmm. I guess it was.
Yeah.
He plays the main character in the Kingsman. Remember, he's Eggy. The one that Colin Firth takes under his wing because he knew his father and they've worked with his father in the Kingsman. So, but it sounds like maybe it's going to be about his father than Tristan. Okay. I'm fine with that. I kind of miss seeing Colin Firth. Colin Firth is the guy that probably should have played James Bond. They never cast. And that movie convinces me of that, but I digress.
Yeah, I agree. Our last untitled joke in October 2nd, it just says untitled Sony Marvel sequel. I'm assuming it's Venom 2 because I know they've been making it and it's been in production for a little while. So, you know, maybe it will be out this year.
I don't think so. I don't know if you drop Venom that close to Morbius coming out, do you?
That's 2 months apart. Yeah, so it might be too close.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be the final Spider-Man that Marvel and them are doing together, but we know that's coming too, you know?
Right.
Because we just got Far From Home last summer. So what else could it be?
Dr. Octopus? I don't know. I think we would have heard about casting for Dr. Octopus by now.
You would think, yeah. I mean, but like you said, if they're setting up a Sinister Six, of course, we both secretly want to be Kraven the Hunter, right?
Yeah.
But, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other one in October, as far as geek films, again, getting back to my generation, they're doing a Snake Eyes movie. Snake Eyes is in the G.I. Joe character.
And I thought they already did an origin story on one of those G.I. Joe movies about him.
Well, the first movie kind of talked about him. I mean, they showed some kind of, you know, the beef with Storm Shadow. But the whole origin of Snake Eyes that came down in the comics, because the same guy that wrote the biographies for the characters that you'd see on the back of the cards.
Oh, with the action figures?
Right. Same guy, Larry Hama, also wrote the Marvel Comics series.
And he
depicted Snake Eyes as being the only American to make it into that Arashikage clan, that red-striped
ninja clan
that you see on their forearm. They all have that insignia on their mm-hmm. forearm. And after Storm Shadow was introduced, Larry said, okay, well, you know, Snake Eyes a white guy, then, because he thought it just fit the character. And before anybody who hears this thinks of a guy named Larry writing somebody who should be an Asian hero, because they did cast an Asian actor to play Snake Eyes. Larry Hama is of Japanese descent, knows martial arts, can brandish a sword, and was a Vietnam vet. So he knows right. Japanese culture, he knows weapons, he knows martial arts, and he knows how the military works. So he's the perfect guy that should have been consulting for this movie, but clearly he's not.
Well, his Snake Eyes is a mute, correct? Isn't he in the comics?
Right.
Like his voice box was damaged or something at some point.
Right. The exact thing that happened in the comics was their sensei, meaning the Arashikage leader, who was called Hardmaster. He was assassinated by Zartan, and Snake Eyes was framed for it. And how it worked is Snake Eyes saw what Zartan did, and before he could go off and do anything, because of course he wasn't a super ninja yet, Zartan shot him through the throat with an arrow. And so that's why he's mute.
You killed my master. I must seek revenge. Mm-hmm. He's seen a few kung fu movies, hadn't he?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, that's the nutshell of Snake Eyes. Now, granted, his face got horribly burned in a battle where his helicopter crashed, or either that or he ran in because he saved Scarlet's life in a helicopter crash and got his face mangled. And that's why
he wears the black mask.
Yes. And that's also why they kind of had a romance going through the entire run. Because, I mean, let's face it, if a man saves a woman's life, wouldn't seem out of the ordinary that, you know, she'd fall for something like that type of...
Stockholm Syndrome? No, that's when you get the kidnappers, the people kidnap fall in love with their kidnappers. That's something else. But anyways, I digress.
Beauty and the Beast, you know. But yeah, you can understand a relationship forming out of something like that because it's very poetic, you might say. Right.
And it's the kind of romantic claptrap that chicks fall for, let's be honest.
you do it right, and it's a trope that works.
And I try to think of myself as a manly man, and if you do it right, I fall for it too, so hey.
Right. November, we're coming to the end here. We get the final Marvel movie of the year. That'll be The Eternals, which I still remember, I think it was Feige saying at San Diego Comic-Con, or maybe it was D23, that it's going to be full-on Jack Kirby.
Right. I remember him saying that too.
Obviously, in 2020, you can get away with something like that, given the incredible track record Marvel has had over 20 some movies.
And that's the one that the lead actress in that is Angelina Jolie.
Yeah,
right?
She's one of the goddess characters in that.
Because if I remember, at San Diego Comic Con last year, they debuted the entire cast of that movie.
At the very least, announced them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought I'll be interested to see how they do the Eternals because you know. They're kind of far out there, but then again, so is Guardians, and how'd that work out for Marvel?
Yeah, I think that was the last hurdle that Marvel had to kind of shed doubts of what franchises could be, because there was a lot of people, many of my friends, who were saying, okay, they're doing a Guardians of the Galaxy movie? Okay, we'll see how it goes.
A guy that whistles an arrow through the air and a talking raccoon with a machine gun and a talking tree.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked.
Right. People talk about the live-action remakes of animated. Well, this is going to be something along those lines. There's finally being a Clifford movie. I think we all read Clifford books when we were kids, right?
Well, I read Clifford books to my kids. I love Clifford, the big red dog. Who doesn't like Clifford? If you don't like Clifford, you got issues.
So something's wrong with you. So we'll see how that works out. It depends on who all is involved with it. Because I'm one of those, I look more into the writer and director before I'll start thinking about an actor. I'm
assuming they're going to do a big CGI for the dog.
I would assume so. Yeah. I don't see why they would go to try to do some sort of practical effect for something like that.
Well, and I think you're right. I think if you cast the right little girl to be his owner, it's a hit.
Right. Kind of going back to the Millie Bobby Brown thing, she's
a little too old for that now, but they could find,
Right. Godzilla versus Kong, the next movie in the Kaiju series. All of them have been good in my book. This is another one I think it got delayed simply because they wanted to do more effects, if I've heard it right.
And yeah, they've done some reshoots on that, haven't they already?
Right. Because I think it was originally supposed to come out this spring, and they pushed it back to the fall. Because they were making it alongside the King of the Monsters, and I know they're going to have some of the same characters. Cause, you know, it's, again, shared universe talk that we were talking about before.
Right. Millie Bobby Brown's character, she's reprising that role, right?
You know, yeah, so she's probably not going to be in Clifford then. They'd be too close together.
Yeah, well, let me ask you something. As the Kaiju guy, I always see to you on this. Were you not a little upset with some of the amount of human story there was in that and not just being monsters beating the crap out of each other?
The biggest problem I had with that was in the first one. But what I tell myself and tell other people that bring that up, if you go back to the original Gojira, not the half-American Raymond Burr version.
No, you're talking the original, yes.
Right. The movie is like 90 minutes into it before Godzilla even shows up, let alone does anything.
Sure.
So it's longer than most movies are, and that's when the bad guy shows up. That's when the monster shows up. So
right. But then when I look at the book, and of course we've got a whole episode of Examining the Dead where we talk about the history of Godzilla and Kaiju in general. Mm-hmm. And you, myself, and Uncle Greg all talked about some of our favorite. There is that chunk in the middle of the Toho days, you know, in the 60s stuff, where that was pretty much every movie. It was just Monsters Battle Royale, every movie after movie.
They literally made a movie called Destroy All Monsters.
Exactly, which I think was on my list or your list. I can't remember. It was on one of our lists, because it is one of the best ones out there, in my opinion, but I digress. Right.
Another remake, we keep talking about how so many remakes come across the pike. I think this is the second one in my lifetime, and that's Dune. Obviously, there was the one with Kyle MacLachlan in the early 80s that did the TV show sometime in the 90s, I think, and this is another feature film. To me, given the technology and how deep the Dune books go, I mean, Dune is not the type of book that the average kid could probably read in junior high school, you know, like The Hobbit or something like that.
Tolkien, you probably could, but not Dune's pretty deep, dude.
Right. I think it would be better suited as like a Netflix or some sort of streaming service series.
Is Herbert even alive still?
I don't believe so. I have to double check that. So,
because I believe he was alive at the Kyle MacLachlan Sting one that you're talking about from the 80s. And if I remember right, he wasn't very happy with the outcome, if I remember right.
Right. And part of that would probably be just maybe the limitations of the time. Yeah, he died in 1986. So, yeah, shortly after that first one came out.
Right. I know that he was I remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is coming through rose-colored glasses for me. My favorite band is Iron Maiden. And they wanted to do, if you know anything about Iron Maiden, one of their favorite things to do is to take pieces of literature and turn them into heavy metal songs. They have a song called Rime of the Ancient Mariner. They have a song called Murder in the Rue Morgue. You know, so you get the idea, the Phantom of the Opera. That's what they do. It's one of the five basic type songs that Maiden does. They wanted to do a Dune song, and Herbert wouldn't give his okay for it. So they wrote it anyways and just didn't have any direct ties to Dune. And there you go. But yeah, so yeah, I know he could be a bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Precocious, maybe?
Protective,
when it came to when it came to his intellectual property. Because, I mean, I understand Iron Maiden it's Iron Maiden and it's heavy metal, and there was a stigma with that in the 80s. But if you look at where they are today, you realize they're one of the biggest grossing bands of all time. Probably wouldn't have been a bad idea if he'd have let them do it. But right. I digress.
Thanksgiving weekend, we're getting Raya and the Last Dragon. Now, of course, given our age and our upbringings, when I hear The Last Dragon, I don't think of a animated movie. I think of the excellent Chopsocky comedy from the 80s, you know, The Last Dragon
That Barry Gordy actually produced.
Right. Where it's a kung fu movie in Harlem. And I mean, is there a better name than Shownuff of Harlem? You know, and Bruce Leroy,
Shownuff is one of the greatest villains of all time. As I just said earlier, I'm a blaxploitation fan. I'm a fan of old Chopsocky exploitation movies. He was the perfect melding of both the villains from those type movies in the 70s, wasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah.
And my favorite scene is when Bruce Leroy is eating the popcorn in the movie theater with chopsticks. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I think that is one of the most underrated movies of all time. It's silly. And when his hands start glowing because he's focusing the power, it's just great, man. To me, that's like the epitome of a popcorn movie. Check your brain in, pay your money, sit down and enjoy yourself.
I'll probably see it. I mean, it may not be till it gets on Disney Plus, but I will probably see it.
But isn't it Raya the Last Dragon? Isn't it an animated?
Yes.
Like kids movie? Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it's for the kids. And to round out my picks here in December, right around Christmas, I may not see it in the theaters. It's just really going to depend on the trailer. It's near and dear to my heart. And there's a Tom and Jerry movie. I'm assuming it's going to be CGI. And I have little faith in this being done justice, because part of the appeal of those Tom and Jerry cartoons is because they did stuff you wouldn't be able to get away with in even animated movies these days with how things happen.
Yeah, my concern is we've talked about it with other movies already, that, you know, in this discussion. In today's social climb and the outrage culture and cancel culture that exists, that's part of the humor of Tom and Jerry. It is overly top. I mean, there's a reason why Matt Groening spoofs them in The Simpsons with Itchy and Scratchy. That's essentially what it is, a spoof of Tom and Jerry, you know?
Right.
So it's like, that's part of the appeal of Tom and Jerry, isn't it? That it's so over the top.
Exactly, yeah.
People get so upset over the littlest things nowadays. Oh my gosh, that poor mouse hurt that poor cat. It's a cartoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, that's going to bring us to the end of our look at 2020, the year in film. If you liked what we heard, we are Geekville Radio. You can find us all over the internets, geekvilleradio.com, wherever fine podcasts can be found. That's also the Twitter and Facebook handle at Geekville Radio. Let us know what you think. Let us know if there's anything you want to see in 2020. Let us know how we're doing. give us a review. The only thing I ask about with reviews is just be honest. I will always appreciate feedback, even if it's negative, as long as it's genuine. And Crazy Train, if anybody wants to talk to you about your tastes and stuff or your controversial opinions, you might get the 10,000-word blog post thrown at you about.
Always available on Twitter at crazytrain_JB.
And that's going to do it for us. We're going to shut down the power here at the Geekville Radio Studios. We'll be coming back soon with some more topical information. We're going to be doing another Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame soon, as well as another nostalgia trip soon. And we'll talk to you folks next time.
Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any product or company unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the host and or guests are purely their own and do not represent the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, A1-Wrestling.com, or any affiliates. Some media used on Geekville Radio is the respective copyright of its publishers, all rights reserved.